first guest is Josh Patel. He is a producer, director, and star of a great new film called Fuel. He is also the author of a couple of books on the same topic, most recently Biodiesel America, and the first was called From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank. In our second segment, my friend Felix Kramer will be joining us. He is one of the pioneers behind the plug-in hybrid car, now getting a lot of attention. It all is overdue, and President Obama is even talking about them. In our third segment, we'll check in with our friend John Marshall Roberts. He'll be talking about communicating on sustainability issues, always an interesting time with him. And last but not least, Gil Friend of Natural Logic will be talking about how we can learn from nature and mimic nature, and we better pay closer attention if we're going to continue to have nature support us. And, of course, we are a part of nature. Want to welcome my first guest, someone I've not had the pleasure to meet in person, but certainly have followed his success as he has gone from veggie van to now producer of a new film that I hope will be a big hit around the country. Josh Patel, welcome to the Green Front.
Thank you, Betsy. Thanks for having me.
I love your film. You talk about how you became such a fan of fuel, clean fuels in particular. You grew up in Australia, where they're having some serious droughts now, and you came back to America with your mother, I guess, who was American, your father Australian, is that correct?
Correct. Mother American, father Australian.
And how did you really take this issue on? I mean, we're all sort of interested these days in environmental things and cars and clean cars especially, but you really became sort of a fanatic in the best possible sense with cleaner fuels, cleaner options for our cars. What was there a particular event, an eco-epiphany, if you will, or was it gradual?
It was gradual with the exception of one major event in my childhood, which was moving from Australia to Louisiana. And Australia is known for its cleanliness and for its health and for its outdoorsiness. And Louisiana is once upon a time known for those things, but today Louisiana produces most of the nation's gasoline. So I got to live in an area called Cancer Alley, which has 150 petrochemical facilities spaced less than 1 mile apart each. And that area has one of the highest incidences of cancer in the country. So I watched a number of my family members get sick, and some of them actually died. And I thought, as a kid, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a way to make cheap and clean, abundant energy that doesn't hurt the planet and that doesn't hurt people.
And in the film, there's a segment where your mother talks about having a series of miscarriages that probably can be attributed to these chemicals, exposure to them.
Well, I tend to think that they are attributable. I mean, endometriosis is one of the key indicators of toxic pollution in the bloodstream, high levels of toxins. A lot of research that's been done on that and the linkage, and it's pretty solid, but you know, people will argue that no, there's no cause and effect there. I mean, the reality is toxic pollution makes people sick. And when we look at the supply chain of how we make energy, as we do in fuel, and I encourage people to look at the website about fuel, thefuelfilm.com, as we look at that supply chain, we see a lot of places where we're not just damaging the earth, we're damaging our bodies. And, of course, now we see a much larger perspective that if you don't take care of the earth and you don't take care of your body, then eventually it'll be reflected in the economy. So you kind of go from Mother Nature to the mother load, to the wallet, so to speak. And those connections weren't clear when I began this journey, but it was that inciting incident that set me on the path to look for green energy.
Not to mention the geopolitical entanglements that our thirst for oil gets us into.
Not to mention. I mean, I think in the United States, one of the things that people have forgotten is we're at war for oil. You know, we kill people for energy. That's one of the businesses that we're in as a country. And that's very harsh for me to say, but look, you know, if Brussels sprouts were the main crop in Iraq and Afghanistan, would we be there? The answer is absolutely not. That's a load of hogwash that we're there for spreading democracy. No one's seen any evidence of democracy in those countries since we entered. So I think the reality is we're sending people back to their homes here in the United States in body bags, and we've caused a lot of death and destruction overseas, all for something that we can create here in the U.S., through efficiency and through new generations of some of the green fuels that we have. So, you know, I encourage people to get out to see the movie Fuel, because the rallying cry for a different future, and I think we all know the problem, but we've gotten resigned. We're like, well, we go to war for oil. That's just what we do. Let's ignore it.
Mm-hmm. You're sort of a more polite version of Michael Moore. You were in the film. You're asking good questions, and I like the fact that you put yourself in it. It makes it more personal, more interesting, and really brings it home, I think, to just average folks.
Thank you. Well, I try to be honest and straight in the movie, as I try to be in my life. Don't always succeed in either case, but yeah, that's the intention. And the intention is just to give people a true story of what's going on. You know, why are we still addicted to this stuff called oil? Why do the oil companies have such a huge hold on the government? Even President Obama is having a tough time shaking the huge tax subsidies given to these companies. I think, we need to stop lying to ourselves as Americans and just say, hey, look, the addiction to oil means that, you know, death and destruction is par for the course, and the alternative and the solutions are so available that other countries are doing them. Let's do them, too.
Well, this is a topic very close to my green heart. In 2002, just a few months after 9/11, a group of us mothers from Marin started a grassroots campaign called Don't Be Fueled, Hybrids Not Hummers, determined to give soccer moms and really parents, families, all Americans, more choices. It was a difficult time to try to bring that to, anybody, out there. They were in my community thinking we were trying to take their SUVs away and reduce their choices. I think it's become painfully clear, why mileage matters and that these issues are so important. So let's look at some of the alternatives. Hybrid cars are great. We just bought a smart car, so now our largest car is a Prius, which is great. We only have one child, so we can get away with that. A little bit hard to squeeze the Labrador Retriever in the back of the smart car, but that's why we kept the Prius. But what about, alternative fuels? What is the latest thinking on the viability of biodiesel? How far can that get us? And then we'll probably have to wait till after the break, but I certainly want to talk about ethanol as well.
Well, I think that the reality is that one of the things we really explore in Fuel is we explore biodiesel. And you see me get very attached to biodiesel. You see me sort of somewhat spearhead the biodiesel movement for a little while. And you see the failure of biodiesel. And the failure was due to the media backlash about deforestation and food prices. That backlash was completely manufactured. And I write about that in the Huffington Post articles that I have online, as well as in the movie Fuel. So there's been an understanding that biofuels suck. They're bad for the world. That's just an understanding that was created by oil companies so that you could, feel a little easier about biofuels failing. The reality is that biofuels, this dirty word, actually have huge potential, namely in two areas. One, in garbage of any kind. I'm talking from sewage to the stuff we throw away, kitchen scraps. And two, with algae, fast-growing algae that can be used in the desert to create billions of gallons of fuel worldwide. Those two areas of technology are developed, they're ready for deployment, and they're proving themselves to be light years ahead of any other way of manufacturing fuel. Low energy inputs, high energy outputs, meaning you're only spending a small amount of energy to create tremendous quantities of fuel, and the numbers in terms of the economics make sense. This is going to be a multi-trillion dollar industry within 5 years.
Wow. What about just plain old vegetable grease? Is that something that we should be expanding the distribution of, or is that just limited but a good way to get people, educated about alternatives?
I think it's limited and a good way to get people educated. There's 3 billion gallons of used cooking oil produced in the U.S. each year. All of that should be being used for biodiesel. Probably about 5% of it is being used for biodiesel. So we need to change that. In Europe, there's a strict law. If you produce used cooking oil, you use it to make biodiesel. In the U.S., what we do with our used cooking oil is we actually feed it to animals, livestock. So we feed it to what will become steaks, and we feed it to what will become chicken on our plate. So we're eating used cooking oil through a series of animal products, and that's very unhealthy.
I'm not sure what's worse, that use or just throwing it away. I guess putting it into food that we eat is probably the worst scenario.
It is worse, because ultimately it's a biodegradable substance. I think we need to be careful with it. I think it needs to be turned into fuel, and it's a part of this larger context of health. How do we keep our bodies in health? How do we keep our planet in health? And how do we keep our economy in health? If you're doing one, chances are you're doing all three.
Okay. So, I want to get your... Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's really the core message of fuel. And folks who check out the website, thefuelfilm.com, they have a sense of that family of connectedness, planet, economy, and body.
Okay, I believe we're coming up on a commercial break. I want to talk about ethanol, ethanol from corn, ethanol from sugar, and also switchgrass, which is apparently one of former President Bush's favorite biofuels. Stay with us. We're speaking with Josh Pickell of the film Fuel and also the recent book, Biodiesel America.
Hey, tea lovers, this is Betsy Rosenberg, and I hope you know about my favorite brand of tea. If not, listen up. This is not just another brand of tea. It's an entirely different level of tea. I'm talking about Mighty Leaf, the tea that's so delicious it helped my husband and I kick our coffee habit a few years ago. Not only does Mighty Leaf use the whole leaf of teas grown in China, India, and beyond, and come in a flavorful assortment of blacks, greens, and whites, but the pouches that hold the tea are as high a quality as the tea itself. The silken biodegradable sacks are not only glue, staple, and chemical-free, they're gorgeous and made from corn. Check it out yourself. You'll find Mighty Leaf at Whole Foods markets across the country, in the finest hotels and restaurants, as well as online at MightyLeaf.com. My current favorites are the Organic Detox Infusion and Organic Green Dragon. So start your day with a cup of Organic Mighty Leaf Tea and get infused with your green routine. In stressful times like these, we need to detoxify our bodies as well as our environment. Discover for yourself why with just one cup of Mighty Leaf Tea, you'll be hooked for life. For personal and planetary health, drink Mighty Leaf.
This is the Green Talk Network, helping to provide a sustainable future for us all.
You're listening to On the Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg. The phone lines are open for your comments and questions at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send Betsy Rosenberg an email. Her address is betsy@thegreenfront.com. Now, back to On the Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg.
And before I get back to my guest, and I'm going to welcome another guest in just a moment, I want to, as I'm fueling up on my green tea from Mighty Leaf, I want to thank our sponsors who make On the Green Front possible every week. Mighty Leaf Tea brings you all kinds of healthy and organic options in green, black, and even white teas. Check them out. You'll find a link on our site, which is www.thegreenfront.com. Also want to thank GreenWorks for their natural cleaning products. I love them. We use them in my home, and they're quite affordable, very effective, and check them out. That is a product from Clorox. They're trying to green at least one line of their products. And last but not least, our partners, content partners, Sustainable Life Media, will be checking in with our sustainable business segment at the end of this hour. Okay, Josh Tickell, when we went to break, we were talking about ethanol, very controversial subject. What is your view on, first of all, ethanol made from corn and then ethanol made from sugar? I was at a green event just last night and talked to someone who is trying to bring more, I guess, sugar cane planting to this country. And I guess Southern California, El Centro, is where they're trying to grow sugar cane for ethanol particularly.
I personally don't feel that ethanol made from corn is advantageous to the United States. And I think that sugarcane is a close second. The reality is we're dealing with a fuel that takes almost as much energy to make as you're getting out in the fuel. Where that initial energy comes from is petroleum. So you're basically trading petroleum for an ag product. And the main issue is the inefficiency in the process. Now, I'm not saying ethanol itself is bad. Ethanol is not bad. It is a good fuel. It substitutes about 8% of our domestic fuel supply already. So chances are, if you've got a gasoline car, you're already putting ethanol in it. The reality is ethanol is a great fuel. Butanol, which is another version of ethanol, like a future version, is even better. But making ethanol from foodstuffs, whether it's sugar from corn or sugar from sugarcane, it's just not efficient. The way we need to go is we need to make ethanol from waste products.
like switchgrass, for instance. What is the latest on that technology?
Well, again, switchgrass, I don't see switchgrass as a solution at all. The amount of water that it takes to grow an acre of switchgrass is tremendous. It is another inefficient crop to create a lot of cellulose material. And if your objective was to create cellulose and to break that cellulose down, the reality is something like hemp or Kenaf would be a much more versatile crop that could be grown to create that same result.
But isn't switchgrass a byproduct of something else? I thought that was the part of the allure was that you don't have to grow it just for ethanol. You can use a part of the plant for that.
Well, this is all in the realm of theory. So,
okay.
In the realm of theory, I am going to get the dilithium crystal machine to work, and that's going to fuel America. But the reality is switchgrass is a grass that has to be seeded, it has to be planted, and it has to be watered with a tremendous quantity of water. So they're looking at lower California and desert regions to grow switchgrass. You might as well plant golf courses in those.